Streaming 24/7.
Oh my God, it's better than I thought.
This is Radio Influence.
We're here and we are fired up to do this edition of We've Seen That. Great to be with you. I'm TJ Reeves, based in the Tampa Bay area. He is my partner, the famous Jay in the Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas area. We are We've Seen That on social media, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. How you feeling? You about to get into the holiday mood? Are you about to get cranked up for everything that's going to happen? We got Thanksgiving around the corner. How you feeling?
I am excited for some big sporting events, and I'm really excited to talk about this movie today.
If you can't tell from the music, we're going retro. You may not recognize this movie offhand until I start the chant, Rocky, Rocky, Rocky. We're going Rocky today, famous Jay on the show, are we not?
We are, and let's kind of tell people we're doing Rocky IV. And the reason being is there's obviously, I believe, six original Rocky movies in the original series.
Yes.
The reason we picked part four is we are kind of, at the time we're taping this, we're kind of about 2 weeks out on the release of Creed 2. And Creed 2's basis is, you know, Creed, the character in Creed, Adonis, is Apollo Creed's son.
Right.
And he is going to accept a challenge from Ivan Drago's son. And this is all based off of Ivan Drago killing his father Apollo in the ring, which
happened
in Rocky IV.
Rocky IV. So it all connects the dots back here to Rocky IV, and only appropriate with Thanksgiving approaching, and you'll talk more about this, that it always seemed that the Rocky movies would come out around this time or around the holiday time. So while we're getting in the festive spirit, we might put our dukes up here on We've Seen It. We might square off on We've Seen It. We've got the old Cold War, too, USA, USSR, as part of the show. Yeah.
It could happen.
All right. So plenty to get to. Let's do it officially, shall we? Here we go.
Today, the Soviet Union has officially entered professional boxing.
This is not just an exhibition fight. Look, this is us against them.
He would like to compete against anyone who is qualified.
Drago is the most perfectly trained athlete ever. Whatever he hits, he destroys.
He could have stopped the fight. He could have saved his best friend's life.
I'll never forget you, Apollo.
But now, the one thing he can't do is walk away.
Has the fight date been set yet?
December 25th.
Where?
It's in Russia.
Are you nuts?
Miss Balboa, when will you be going to Russia?
I'm not going to Russia. I don't know what you're talking about.
He's had one professional fight, and one man is dead.
To Pepe, he's going to have to kill me.
Why can't you change your thinking?
Because I'm a fighter.
You can't win!
Okay, Rocky IV, it was released November 27th, 1985 from United Artists. It opened at, you guessed it, number one for its opening weekend. It grossed $19.91 million to open number one. It ended up with a domestic gross of $127.8 million. Overseas, it made $172.6 million. Its worldwide in 1985 made $300 million. It based on just normal, without any adjusting or anything like that, it is the number one series in the Rocky movies for making money. As far as 1985, it was number three. Do you want to care to venture what one or two was?
Man, I'm trying to think back in the mid 80s. You always hit me with this. It's, you know, we're around the times of the comedies that we've done before, like Beverly Hills Cop. You also have dramatic movies, Schwarzenegger movies. I don't know. 85. Nothing stands out. Breakfast
Number
Club
one.
We did recently. Wasn't Breakfast Club 85?
Breakfast Club was 85, but it was ranked number 16.
Okay, so it was nowhere close to this. Give me the two
in front of
Rocky IV.
Number
please.
One, which is a super iconic film that we still talk about to these days, was Back to the Future, starring Michael J. Fox.
Probably it a grossed future. We've seen that.
Most likely. It grossed $210 million. Number two, to show you how great the year 1985 was for Sylvester Stallone, number two was Rambo, First Blood Part Two.
Wow, he had
number two and number three that year.
I would love to know. Was Rambo a summer movie or was it around?
Rambo came out at Memorial Day. It was May 22nd. So he had Memorial Day and Thanksgiving. He owned them both.
He owned both of those national holidays with these two movies. So I always like to do this and the audience can reminisce with us. I'm a teenager at this time. I'm in high school at this time in Florida. And I vividly remember Rocky IV in the theater with friends of mine and the theater going bonkers through, especially the climactic fight scene with Drago. Did you see this one in the theater or was it VHS time, Blockbuster Video, etc. for you?
No, this was a theater one. And, you know, I tell you, if I remember where I saw it, I remember this one so well because I saw it multiple times at the same place. My younger brother Dan and I went and saw it, and he, you know, like my mom actually took us. We weren't old enough to go to the movies by ourselves at that moment. But we saw this one. And for people in Fort Worth, you're going to remember this. Is Hewlin Mall had a big theater. It was a United Artists theater behind the mall. And it had a bunch of small little auditoriums. But it had this one gigantic theater. It had like 600 seats, a huge screen, THX sound. And we saw it in that one a couple different times. Ooh. And the first time we saw it was on like a Saturday afternoon. Completely and totally full. Everybody's cheering like we're at a sporting event. It was so much fun. We went back and saw it again like the following week.
I love it.
We bugged my mom into taking us again because it was so fun. And it was really like we talk about a lot of this. Part of the fun of these movies is the experience of seeing it with other people and talking about it as opposed to just, you know, watching it. And that's kind of what this was. It was really an experience seeing this movie in THX and all the people cheering on Rocky in the theater. In the arena.
That's right. That's the thing that I remember the most. And I don't think I saw this one twice in the theater. Maybe I did. I just remember the first time everybody went absolutely bonkers as the final climactic scene, which we'll get to, unfolds. So that's the things that stick with you, and it's 30 plus years later for you and me. All right, so let's get to it. Cast on this one, we know the Sly Stallone leads the cast.
Yeah, let me hit one more box office note real quick on Stallone. We mentioned how great 1985 was for him, and I mean, he must have literally been the king of the world, because if you look at his all-time grosses, and we know he's had tons and tons of big hits. He's had his share of bombs, but he's had tons of big hits. On his all-time list, his highest grossing movie actually is a recent one, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, made $863 million. Number two was the sequel, The Expendables Part 2, in 2012, made $315. But then this is worldwide unadjusted, Rocky IV is his third biggest movie all time.
Incredible.
At $300.5 million. And Rambo 2 is his fourth all-time biggest at $300.4 million. So Rocky IV outgrossed Rambo 2 worldwide by $100,000.
That's amazing. That's amazing. not even in
just think about how much money that would be today.
Right. You talk about it, that's probably easily the $300 million of 1985 is easily $500 or $600 million, right? Close to double, right?
Just in the U.S., if you adjust Rocky IV's, it's $323 million.
Mm-mm-mm. So it was an ultra, ultra, and keep in mind the movie prices were different then than what they are now. That's another part for the adjustment. So that tells you how many more people would have seen the movie probably in 1985 if you do the math. So it was an immensely popular film. All right, so
let's look at some of Stallone's early stuff. Let's kind of dive into the cast. There's people that follow Stallone and follow movies well are well aware of the 1970 flick, if we want to call it that, known as The Party at Kitty and Studs, which was renamed The Italian Stallion, which is why we're mentioning it. It was an adult film that was filmed on a very small budget that he probably wished he'd never done. But hey, you know, you need the money, you got to work. So it of course, came out and got a little more notoriety. It was re-released around the time of the success of the original Rocky, which won Best Picture in 1976. It also he was in he had a major part in the original Rocky. Did you kind of follow any of that? You know, he fought for himself to keep the lead because the studio wanted someone else.
Well, yeah, and he was basically an unknown.
Right, he was an unknown. He hadn't done anything where anyone would be like, "Oh my gosh, he's going to be the next big thing."
But it's also it's one of the great underdog stories, just like the movie itself, because he came from nowhere to have this acclaim that you're about to detail with the Academy Awards.
Right, yeah, he won 3 Oscars. It won Best Picture, Best Director, Best Film Editing. But it was also up for a bunch it didn't win. It was up for Stallone for actor, Talia Shire for actress, Burgess Meredith supporting actor, Burt Young supporting actor. Best writing screenplay for the screen, best sound, best music. I mean, it's one of those where it was such a success that it led us into the Rocky that we know now. And of course the Stallone we know now, because remember at the end of the original Rocky, you had Apollo Creed had defeated Rocky and he said, there's going to be no rematch. Right. And then Rocky II starts and they're in the hospital and he's talking about, oh, we're going to have a rematch. We're gonna have a rematch. So that's how Rocky II went. Rocky III, we know, was Mr. T. And in the meantime, he had made, you know, some other films, Nighthawks, which was with Billy Dee Williams and Rucker Hauer, the really well-known the police officer movie in New York. Then there was Victory, the soccer movie Pele was in.
Loved that one. And he wrote that one, directed that one, came up with all of that one, too. That's an underrated sports / war movie intertwined drama.
Was Michael Caine in that too?
Michael Caine in that. Yeah. Max von Sydow as the German lieutenant that organizes the soccer game, and it really it's a good movie. That I mean, there are a lot of Stallone's movies that do not have a whole lot of plot and a whole lot of twist. That would be one that does in terms of the recommendation. But yeah, all these around the same time period, building with the Rockies, Rocky II, Rocky III, and then eventually Rocky IV.
In the original, Rambo was in 82. First Blood had Brian Dennehy, Richard Crenna. That was a good one. Then Rocky IV and Rambo II we mentioned in 85. Kind of following that, it's almost like he was so big he thought he could literally do anything. and he followed that up with Cobra, which it was in 86, which you remember from the really famous line, "You're the disease and I'm the cure."
Right.
And it was kind of his version of Dirty Harry and his take on what he wanted the original Beverly Hills Cop to be. And we talked about that in Beverly Hills Cop 2 podcast we did, where he was originally going to be Axel Foley, but he wanted it to be gritty and dark and crime-filled, and they just had different, you know, views on it, so he went his own way. And Cobra is essentially, had he had his way with Beverly Hills Cop, that's what it would turn into.
Well,
I'm
sure that we'll get to this because it's intertwined with Brigitte Nielsen, not only in Rocky IV, but also Beverly Hills Cop 2, and also in Cobra. So it all comes back around. But yeah, I mean, Stallone was on a roll. There's no doubt in the mid 80s for sure.
Yeah, this is kind of where, if you want to talk about a spiral, he kind of spiraled downward because we had Over the Top, where he played Lincoln Hawk, the Rocky arm wrestling movie that came out from Gullin and Globus, which was awful. Rambo 3, which didn't do really well. It came out around the time that Red Heat did with Schwarzenegger, and it definitely did not do as well. You had Tango and Cash, which you and I both like.
We like that one.
You know, it's not a hit in the stratosphere of Rocky IV and Rambo. And then it just kind of keeps you've got Oscar, you've got Rocky V, which I don't know anyone that likes Rocky V.
Terrible.
You've got Stopper, My Mom Will Shoot. And then kind of for whatever reason, I don't know if like a light went off in his head or whatever, but he kind of went back to being Stallone. He made Cliffhanger, Demolition Man, you know, The Specialist. In fact, there for a while, he kind of owned October because he had Demolition Man in 93, The Specialist in 94, The Assassins in 95. You know, it's kind of, he went back to being Stallone. And coincidentally, his movie started making money again. What do you think about all that?
You just rattled off about 3 future we've seen that's out of all of those, including Cliffhanger, where he plays Gabe and has Michael Rooker in it with him. And there's such a, you know,
John Lithgow is the villain
in that. That one's tremendous. You mentioned Assassins with Banderas, Julianne Moore. The Specialist with Sharon Stone in it right after she did Basic Instinct, or right around the same time.
I don't know that we'll do an entire episode on The Specialist, but what do you think about that?
Well, I mean, again, you're right. He got back to the bang, bang, shoot 'em up type of what he had been with Rambo. Again, not tremendous plot in those movies. I mean, you pretty much understood it's going to be bang, bang, shoot 'em up, kill everybody type movies, but Cliffhanger does have.
What about James Woods?
He's fantastic.
So over the top.
But you would agree with me, Cliffhanger out of all of those has the most plot, has the most story. and obviously has the dramatic, thrilling scenes, the suspense scenes of what's going to happen while these guys are up at elevation at 10,000 feet, 15,000 feet with the terrorist robbers here that are coming to rob the U.S. Mint. So yeah, I like Cliffhanger right. out of all of those. Probably, Assassins is good too. But again, they spend the whole movie on bang bang, shoot 'em up. Who has the most ammunition left between he and Banderas with their guns? So I don't.
Yeah,
know.
Well, I thought Cliffhanger was really good, and it's one of those that if you can see it in the theater, it's just spectacularly shot. I really like that. I thought Judge Dredd was pretty lame. I thought Assassins was actually really. I was disappointed. Then Daylight, the one where they're stuck in the tunnel. Didn't like that one too much. And then you remember you had Copland, which had De Niro and Harvey Keitel and Ray Liotta. It was like, Oscar bait where he put on all that weight.
There's just so many Stallone movies.
You remember he put on all the weight, kind of like De Niro did with Raging Bull. It's kind of like he's going for an Oscar. And it did okay. It wasn't quite received as much as everybody thought it would be loved. And then, once again, another downward spiral. We had Get Carter, Driven, ICU, which is his least grossing movie of all time, his lowest grosser. Then he was on an episode of Las Vegas, the James Caan TV show. Then he goes back to what he knows. He did Rocky Balboa in 2006, which did well. He did the fourth Rambo in 2008. Then he goes to The Expendables, where basically he got all of his buddies like Mel Gibson and Schwarzenegger, everybody that had been having problems in real life essentially, or had kind of gone down, and they are all in this movie, and it's really entertaining. Got a lot of pub there, and so now – he's made three Expendables. The most recent one didn't do as well in America, but made over $200 million worldwide. And then 2015, he had Creed, which did really well. And upcoming, we have Creed 2. And that's kind of that's our little rundown of Mr. Sylvester Stallone, in case you didn't know who he was.
How many that are in there? And so again, in this time frame, we were kind of eagerly anticipating this one as to what was going to happen, because Stallone's character Rocky had joined forces with Carl Weathers' Apollo Creed to defeat Mr. T, Clubber Lang, in Rocky III. So now you could have left well enough alone, but as we've now found out over the course of time, Stallone can't leave Rocky. He can't quit Rocky. He can't leave it alone. So now we got to have the whole impetus for this, and that's how the cast unfolds. I think we kind of sidetracked ourselves on the cast. But go through who all is in Rocky IV here and how it works intertwined together.
We've also got Talia Shire, of course, playing Adrian. We have Burt Young playing Polly, who is the brother-in-law. And speaking of Polly, he's so just negative and bitching and moaning all the time. Do you know anybody like that in real life?
Am I allowed to talk about in-laws on the show? I have in-laws. You do not have in-laws. Of course, my
I have in-laws. They just aren't mine. I have brother-in-laws and sister-in-laws.
That's true. So you are a brother-in-law in that instance. Everybody has their in-laws, and they're all varying shapes and sizes and people and personalities. And Polly is completely a hanger-on here. But there are a couple of moments. There are a couple, including in Rocky IV, which we'll probably get to, including right before the Drago fight, where Pauly is very sentimental with Rocky. So you can.
But he can't help himself. He always goes back to being Pauly.
Well, of course. And we all have in-laws that, everybody's got relatives that have different personalities and in-laws that have different personalities and whatever. And it's a package deal. If you want Adrian,
well, I have a guy I work with Pauly. Named Ted, who is just negative, and he brings everybody down every time he's at work. And that's kind of what Pauly reminds me of. In fact, I've said this to him a couple of times. Like, do you like pattern yourself after Pauly, or are you just, just miserable all the time?
Is Ted old enough that he knows who Pauly is from Rocky?
Yeah, he was like in the Marines, and he's all, he's just like,
are you saying?
He's like a thinner
that
version
if
of
Ted
Pauly.
Was to make a movie with you, if you were Rocky, that he would have Ted on the back of his shirt, like Pauly has on the back of his shirt for Rocky.
If I was writing the movie, I would write his part out. Because that's just saying.
Are you saying that? Okay, so Ted is not a fan of. We've seen that now because we're just throwing him under the bus. I don't even know Ted.
Ted will not be hearing this episode because he doesn't know how to use podcasts.
How about that?
He struggles with his iPhone.
All right, so I keep sidetracking you. Continue on the cast, because we've got Talia Shire. We've got Burt Young as Pauly. We've got Carl Weathers back. Yep.
Yeah, the great Carl Weathers playing Apollo Creed. And we kind of mentioned in the opening or whatever that you had Apollo Creed was his, nemesis in parts one and part two. Of course, part two, he beat him to win title. So part three, he loses the title to Clubber Lang. He's kind of gone soft. And Apollo Creed, because he's got this hidden agenda that he wants to fight Rocky again, he decides to take him on and train him and teach him how to get the Eye of the Tiger back and win. And so they become really good friends through that, which is you could never have predicted by watching the original two Rockies that these guys would be buddies.
But that's the twist. But if I can interject, that's the twist that works for Rocky III. They join
it's
forces
great
because of what happened.
Yeah, because he's a cool dude. I mean, even as a bad guy, you like him. He's a really good actor. And you know, we've seen Carl Weathers. He's been in a bunch of other stuff. You know, we as sports fans, we all saw him in Happy Gilmore, the Adam Sandler movie. And you know, I believe did he not play for the Oakland Raiders?
I was gonna pop quiz you, and you already had that. He was a football player with the Oakland Raiders, playing for John Madden, playing for Al Davis back in the early 70s. And it's one of the things, his athletic body, his kind of resemblance physique-wise to Muhammad Ali in the 70s, that's what appealed to Stallone and everybody else that was involved with making the movie in the auditions. And hey, you got to go get Carl Weathers to play the Apollo Creed character.
Well, we did a recent show on the passing of the great Burt Reynolds. And one of Burt Reynolds' biggest movies ever was Semi-Tough. Remember that one,
right?
The football movie?
Yes.
And Carl Weathers was in that. He played Dreamer Tatum.
So and of course,
he's been a bunch of stuff.
We know him. We know him from Predator with Schwarzenegger later on.
Action Jackson.
I
may have forced you into doing an episode of Action Jackson with Sharon Stone and Craig T. Nelson, because I really – that's one of my movies I saw as a kid that I would watch multiple times.
So,
one thing I want to mention real quick on Carl Weathers – well, if people that have listened to us know that the streets of San Francisco is like one of your all-time go-tos.
Yes.
He had a guest starring role as Officer Haig in the 1977 season of the streets of San Francisco.
You got me on that. Was it only one episode, or was Officer Haig?
It was one episode. It was in 1977. So it's towards the end. It was probably Richard Hatch time. I believe Michael Douglas would probably have moved on to bigger things by then.
How about that? All right. So yeah, Carl Weathers around, and even later, Happy Gilmore as Chubbs. Carl Weathers knocking around with a lot of different roles in the 90s and et cetera. But he's
currently he's got a show, doesn't he? Anything on like Chicago PD or Chicago Justice or one of those?
I'm not big on the nighttime weeknight dramas anymore on Weathers, and they've had so many different incarnations of Chicago whatevers.
I'm gonna throw that out that I think he's currently on one of those.
Somebody can correct us down the road, but to me, it's no different than Stallone. You can talk about Rambo and all those other roles. Stallone is Rocky for all time. Carl Weathers is Apollo Creed for all time. That's my
point.
For all time.
And we've got a main character in this we know because he was in the corner of Apollo Creed. We have Tony Burton playing Duke. And I thought he did a really good job, especially the part when they're in the cabin and he goes in to talk to him and explains to Rocky about Apollo being his son.
Right.
Like a son to him and how he raised him. And he said, now you're the one that can make it that he didn't die for nothing. And I thought, you know, some like serious good acting, you know, I mean, a lot of times these popcorn type movies don't have those movies, but or those parts, but it's kind of like in Wayne's World when they were joking the Oscar clip. That's kind of what that part was like to me. I thought he did a really good job in this. And obviously, you know, during the fight, the no pain, you know.
Well, and Tony Burton had been a fighter previously in his life, and he's really good, at least in the initial Rocky, as trying to be the voice of reason with Apollo Creed and get him to understand this is about to be a serious fight with Rocky. My point is he always had respect for Rocky even at the beginning. This is a dangerous fighter with a heart as big as he is. You can't just disregard this man or take him lightly. And then it's neat how it comes back around because Duke is with him. Tony Duke Evers is with him in the corner with Apollo when they beat Mr. T. And then he's with him, unfortunately, with what happens in Rocky IV with Apollo Creed in the fight with Drago eventually. So the bond is there from Rocky III on. But the makings of this is in Rocky. I mean, Stallone wrote that character as, hey, he's the conscience here that Apollo needs to have. Remember, I mean, there's the one scene in Rocky where obviously they're showing on TV when he's hitting the frozen meat, the frozen cows that have been slaughtered in the meat house. And it's Duke who says to Apollo, hey, champ, you better get in here and look at this guy that you're fighting. He realizes this is no joke. You better take this guy seriously. He's trying to be the voice of reason. So my point is that Stallone had written him in as an important character. I don't know that he wrote him in with it in mind. I'm going to make four of these movies, and eventually Duke is going to be in my corner and have that scene you're talking about. But he definitely laid the groundwork.
No, I agree. And he's a great character, good, solid character actor that was in tons of stuff. Of course, he passed away in February 2016. But the great Tony Burton, really good in Rocky IV. And moving on, we got a couple more I want to mention before we dive into the plot. We've got Brigitte Nielsen.
There we go.
Who kind of check out this start she had. 85 Red Sonja with Schwarzenegger, 85 Rocky IV. Then Cobra in 86, Beverly Hills Cop 2 in 87. And that kind of coincides. Remember when we did the Beverly Hills Cop 2 episode, talked about how she allegedly had an affair with the director of Beverly Hills Cop 2 and her and Stallone split. After that, you haven't heard of any of these other movies she's in. 976, Evil 2, Mission of Justice, Chain to Heat 2, you know, Snowboard Academy. She's too tall. So just think about it. You want to talk about a fall from grace, but this was kind of her at her height.
She was unfortunately like Michael Rooker's girlfriend in Cliffhanger. She got dropped off the guide wire and it was over career-wise after crossing Stallone. But again, easy come, easy go here because she got with him and that's how she got the role. As am I saying
one
it right?
would assume Ludmilla, that probably had something to do with it.
Right. Ludmilla Drago. Well, she's not even Russian, though, in this. She's of Swedish Austrian descent. But she got the role in large part because she was with Stallone and it set up the part of her career that was at least successful there in the mid 80s.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, she played the part fine. She was not very likable, which her character was not. I mean, she was, you know, pretty attractive, but her character was not real overly friendly. So
she's a Dane. She's from Denmark. Continue on, yes.
Well, last but not least, we have Dolph Lundgren playing Ivan Drago.
Love me some Dolph Lundgren. Very interesting about how he came up with the role because he's a guy that – looked the part size-wise, but also beyond just that, had a lot of savvy, had a lot of smarts, spoke a lot of languages, had degree in chemical engineering in the 1980s, a master's degree from the University of Sydney in engineering, well-educated guy. But the bottom line here is he looked the part of the Russian, of Drago. You would agree?
Yeah, and I thought he did great. I mean, you know, I believe he was kind of a man of few words, you know, like Clubber Lang, Apollo Creed. They've all been loud and boisterous and almost like Muhammad Ali caricatures, how they pop off at the press conferences and this and that. And his basically is, you will lose. You know, he's short and to the point.
He didn't have a whole lot to say. And of course,
he let his fist do the talking.
That's where the controversy of his people around him were talking about, hey, we've had death threats and there's no way this puny American champion can contend with a Russian specimen like Drago. You know, one of those. But you're right. It works that he's just deadpanning those. The best thing is out of all the languages that Dolph Lundgren spoke, from Swedish to German to English, he didn't speak Russian. They had to teach him a few lines.
Naturally,
Russian.
Of course.
Yes. Had to make it work.
So let's look at some of his stuff after he did Rocky IV. His debut, his premiere in movies was the James Bond A View to a Kill, which he's been for a few seconds.
Right.
He followed up Rocky IV with Masters of the Universe, where he played He-Man. We know him really well from the Universal Soldier series, where he was alongside Jean-Claude Van Damme. And I'm not going to lie, I really enjoyed the first one. I thought it was good. Are you a Universal Soldier fan?
Those movies, I mean, all of them in and around there are all kind of the same thing. You know, he plays either the terrorist or the good guy. They're bang, bang, shoot 'em ups, not unlike what Stallone did. So he's kind of my point is he's in the same role over and over again after he's Drago.
Right. You know, well, the Universal Soldier with him and Jean-Claude Van Damme, essentially they were both kind of like Terminators because they were regenerated, you know, humans that had passed away in Vietnam. And they kind of turned them back into, like, you know, assassins, if you will. And, yeah, he did a bunch of the lower rent straight to video, if you will, for your blockbuster video fans, like straight to video action movies. And then he kind of popped back up with the Expendables series. Because he was in those with Stallone. He played Jensen. So Gunnar Jensen, I believe, was his name.
So and, he was good to him.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's you look at Stallone from the outside. I mean, I've heard plenty of stories about how he is in real life. But from the outside, it certainly comes across like he takes care of those he likes. And if you're like Brigitte Nielsen and don't do him right, he has the power to make you disappear from the Hollywood scene. There's one I want to mention in 2016, looking through the little IMDb on Dolph Lundgren. 2016. The anxiously awaited Kindergarten Cop 2. Which, I know you've seen it, so I'm not going to make fun of it.
I've seen Kindergarten Cop. I was not even aware there was a second one. And so was that not only straight to video or DVD, was that straight into the trash can? Is that
one? It was probably one of those that, you know, they – now that they've got digital on demand and there's so many different movie channels and you've got, you know, at the time I'm speaking, there's probably more, but we've got Netflix, Amazon Prime, Hulu. I'm sure I'm leaving some out, but there's so many different apps where you can get Crackle, I believe, is one, you know, and obviously all the HBO and Cinemax and Stars, they all have their own apps. You know, so these, the thing about all these for people that have create content is that they need content. So if you want to go throw something out like Kindergarten Cop with Arnold Schwarzenegger is one of the biggest hits of 1990. Let's see if we can zoom into those kids that were 16 years ago were kids and now they're grown up spending money. Let's see if we can get them interested in this. And that's just how it works, you know.
Well, I love in the background of Lundgren, this is amazing how stories come about, that he learned about this movie being made, and he sent videos of him working out, sent pictures of himself to a couple of emissaries, essentially, of Stallone, third-party people, trying to get himself the role, and it did not work. Stallone thought he was too tall, because what is Lundgren, about 6'5", and he's obviously towering over Stallone in the climactic scene there. But they had over 5,000 people that expressed interest or tried out for this, and Lundgren just stood out. He actually auditioned, stood out, and they came back to him, and he got the deal. And again, it's the defining role of his acting career. He'll be known forever. I can't get over how old Stallone now is, how old Lundgren is, how old Carl Weathers is. Dolph Lundgren's 61 years old at the time we're taping this, and 30-plus years later, he's Drago. Period.
Yeah.
Period.
Yeah.
The end.
And he will be in Creed 2. He is.
That's right.
Has a part in Creed 2. So he's still around.
No doubt about that. But I think it's fascinating that he didn't initially win Stallone over, and he actually had to essentially convince him in the audition process again that they would come back to him. So
safe to say that he made the right call, don't you?
Well, yeah, no doubt that it works. I mean, Stallone would have probably made it work with whomever they ended up picking, because keep in mind, as long as it was an athletic person, it's not like it took tremendous acting skill in terms of lines and delivery and that kind of thing. It was, can you handle yourself as a big physical guy in a choreographed fight scene? That's the biggest thing here. The two choreographed fight scenes with Apollo Creed early in the movie in a short fight, and then the choreographed fight scene in the longer fight that almost goes the distance, almost in the climax of Rocky IV.
And since we're talking climax, we probably don't need to break it down scene by scene, because it's an hour and a half of just pure adrenaline. It's so much. It's just fun. And in case anyone can't tell from me talking about it, I love this movie. This is probably my favorite of the Rockies. It's either this one or three.
Well, you
because
told
those
me
are the two
now,
that I saw.
You told me that when you were getting ready to do this show in recent days, that you had not seen it in a while, but you went ahead and watched it beginning to end, bell to bell. And that's the how manyth time that you've seen it beginning to end?
Probably 20th all the way through. If you want to count the times when, you know, you're at the gym and it's on and you
right.
plug your headphones into that, maybe 50.
Or Saturday afternoon, it's on TNT, or it's on one of the cable channels on Saturday night.
Well, this kind of funny. You know, the great Mark Stein is the NBA writer for the New York Times.
Right, right.
There was one time when I was getting home late, and I say late, probably 10 or 10:30, not super late, and it was on TNT or something, and I'd seen him. I follow him on Twitter. Great follow if you like NBA. I follow him on Twitter, and he posted something about Rocky IV being on. And so I popped it on then, and you know, and it, like enough people were doing it that there was kind of like a little Twitter chat room where people were all watching it together, and all off of people, I'm assuming, because he's got, you know, multiple billions of followers. So it's funny that there's so many people that this many years later, this movie means so much to. And a lot of it's just because, you know, these characters mean a lot to us. Like, you know, starting out, we have you know, the it literally picks up where Rocky III ends, with them walking in there and having their little fight, you know, you owe me that favor that he kept talking about all through three, you know, and then he pulls up to his house and his son's got his video camera out. And you can kind of tell that this isn't the Rocky from Rocky I. This is Rocky's got money. He's got a nice house, really nice car. you know, son's got a video camera and he's talking to him about getting punched and everything. And you know, who gave that hat? And, you know, a friend. Who gave you the black eye? Same friend. You know, and then they've got Polly living with him, of course, because that's what he is. He's nothing. And it's his birthday, and he's complaining that his present's not parked out in the driveway. You know, he says if they had to wait for Rocky much longer, they could be celebrating his next birthday. I mean, you name it. There's not one positive syllable comes out of this guy's mouth. And so the really funny part to me was they bought him a robot because he doesn't have any friends. So he has something to keep him company.
And what do you think about that robot? The robot brings him the birthday cake, right?
Yeah. The robot at first, you know, has the real deep voice, happy birthday, Polly.
Right. But he ends up being able to reprogram it later on to have the female voice and be like female companionship for Polly.
Exactly. He's like, oh, Polly, you're the best, and brings him a beer and stuff. It's just so funny. And then you've got, you know, Apollo, who's obviously, you know, this is kind of, I don't know if it's just subtly, but it shows his life's pretty good too. He's chilling in the pool, you know, throwing balls to his dogs, and he sees the on TV about Drago coming here, and they're requesting a fight with Rocky because they want to do an exhibition, right? And so he goes over to talk to Rocky and says he wants this fight because, of course, he hadn't fought in 5 years, and everybody's lasting memory of him is him getting beat by Rocky. And, he wants one more chance, even though Adrian's saying, you know, you guys, I care about both of y'all. I don't want anything to happen. You know, and anybody who's seen the trailer already knows what happens, because this was not a secret, because it happens at the beginning of the movie. So, of course, Apollo turns back into the Apollo Creed we know. He goes to fight him in Vegas at the old MGM, which I believe is now Bally's.
Right. Let's stop right here on this, because it is the premise from boxing that Stallone hones in on for so many years and so many fighters, from Ali to Sugar Ray Leonard. I mean, just start naming them, Mike Tyson, on and on down the list, that just could not stay. And you can even go old school boxing and guys like Joe Louis, who had to do it for financial reasons. Sugar Ray
George
Robinson.
You host a boxing podcast, right?
Right, yes, absolutely.
Would y'all talk about George Foreman and all them on your boxing podcast, by chance?
We would, yes. But, I mean, the point is, fighters can't leave it alone. They can't walk away. They miss the adrenaline. They miss being on the stage. They miss the training, the action, the culminating of all your hard work in victory. And so many of these guys end up, Roy Jones Jr. in the present day, still trying to fight professionally.
Floyd Mayweather.
When he's 10. Well, at least Mayweather is still realistically got a boxing career. Roy Jones is 10 years beyond his prime, at least, and is taking brain damage getting in the ring now for no reason when he's financially successful. You can understand it when Joe Louis back in the 40s, the 50s or whatever was fighting for financial reasons and because of debt with the IRS. You could maybe understand some of these fighters. I mean, Mike Tyson kind of fell into the same thing where he was broke. And remember, he had to have the second or the third comeback or the third or the fourth comeback because he basically admitted, I'm out of money and I'm still trying to fight. My point is, Apollo wants this fight with Drago for competition. He's got all the money, but he misses training, being in the ring, the adrenaline rush, winning, and he believes he can beat Drago because Drago's inexperienced.
He misses the love, the adoration. Yeah. Yeah. You know, when he's watching the fight with Rocky from when the two of them had fought, and he says, you know, boy, that Stallion, when you're there, they love you, but the minute you're gone, they don't care anything about you. You know, and that's part of Apollo was the adoration that he got. He was the champion. You know, and that's what I gather from it anyways. He wanted that love, you know, and I just tell by the opening of the fight when Drago's standing in the middle of the ring and he has this huge production with James Brown singing Living in America, and he's dancing. He's got all the Las Vegas
showgirls. Now, wait a minute.
And
you are the best at coming up with this on We've Seen That. How did they convince James Brown to come do that song? Because eventually, I mean, this is the era – we've already played some of the music of MTV and music videos. This became James Brown's music video. Living in America was from the Rocky fight scene. It was kind of like dual purpose. It was not only on the soundtrack and in the movie, but it was part of James Brown's singing career and his music video. I wonder how much wrangling had to go on to get the Godfather of Soul in the movie.
Anyone who was around then knew that was going to be a huge hit, and anybody involved with it was going to get the attention and some, you know, with attention, you know, in Hollywood comes dollars, De Niro.
And you don't mean Robert De Niro in that instance, but yeah, that's
I do
it's
not
iconic.
Mean Raging Bull Robert De Niro. I mean Rocky and Carl Weathers.
You can go on YouTube and just YouTube the music video of Living in America, James Brown. It's even a patriotic song that a lot of stations will play in and around July 4th. Remember when fireworks shows were going on, they played James Brown, Living in America.
Or even, you know, a little somber note, like 9/11.
Yes.
When they play Living in America and Proud to be American. I mean, those are songs that are kind of, you know, withstand the test of time.
Clearly for the plot of the movie, Apollo has taken his training somewhat seriously, but he has no idea really what he's in store for. And what is it? Warner Wolf, who's doing the television commentary. You know, I'm a broadcaster. I'm a play-by-play guy. I do this sports stuff.
What is Stu Nahan?
Stu Nahan. And is it Warner Wolf that's sitting there with him, or whoever the analyst is sitting there with him? He comes up with a great line. He goes, this whole thing is bizarre. Creed's over the hill and Drago hasn't fought anybody. Well, the hasn't fought anybody is the part that draws Creed in. And then he's about to unfortunately realize he's in the wrong place at the wrong time with a guy that can kill him. And
no, he's a complete unknown. You know, in the locker room beforehand where Stallone's wearing his obviously product placement Hugo Boss sweatshirt, he's talking to Apollo. He says, maybe we should postpone this thing and we don't know anything about this guy and, you know, and this and that. And Apollo, because of the attention factor, he says, so what happens? Somebody else swoops in and knocks this bum out. Where does that leave me? And there's just – there's so many factors into it. So, you know, kind of moving on to the fight itself, like I said, it's at the old MGM, which if you've been to Vegas now, I believe is Bally's.
It's not the MGM we know. It's not the MGM
it's not the one with the gigantic lion you walk into. It's the old school MGM.
I have stayed in the MGM Grand. I don't know if you've been in it, but a lot of our audience may have been in it or may have stayed in it. The MGM Grand, you can literally go in there and not have to leave by design for like days because they have restaurants. They have movie theater.
Well, that's every mega casino.
Well,
you need.
The problem with the
MGM Grand is it's down the end of the strip.
Right.
So you, if the others be in the middle, you're like, well, if I'm in the Mirage or Bally's, I can walk out and go, you know, next door. But the MGM Grand's down there kind of by itself with New York and
That's correct. I remember being in there for a couple of days with all of the restaurants and the casino and the theater, and they've got the arena where they, speaking of Mike Tyson, they would have the Mike Tyson fights, which, by the way, we're coming off of at the time that we're taping this, we're coming off of Veterans Day weekend, and we're coming off the now 22nd anniversary of Evander Holyfield beating Mike Tyson to capture the heavyweight title in 1996 off of Mike Tyson in November at the MGM Grand. So you would have these big boxing prize fights there, so it's only appropriate that Apollo's fighting in Vegas this time at the old MGM.
Hey, let me ask you this. Have you ever been to a big prize fight?
I have been to a couple of them, yes. They have been in Tampa, not in Vegas or in Atlantic City, and it is a goal of mine on the bucket list to go to a big-time fight in one of those venues eventually, yes.
Okay, I've been to a couple fun ones. My dad took me and my brother to go see Evander Holyfield and Michael Moore.
It was in Vegas.
Yeah, wow. It was a fun deal. It was the first time I've ever been to Vegas. I wasn't old to do anything. But the first time I'd been there, it was really neat. And you know, we would watch because HBO used to have all these big fights. They weren't on TVKO or pay-per-view or whatever, you know, that you could just watch Tyson fight Buster Douglas on HBO, you know. So we used to love watching boxing. I had friends over the house and everything. My dad sometimes had my uncles and stuff over. You know, it'd be a cool deal. And I'd always said how I wanted to go. And I guess that one, for whatever reason, it didn't have the huge ticket prices or whatever. So we went, the Mirage put it on, but the fight was actually at the Thomas and Mack Center. So we did that whole bit where we went and saw it, and, you know, and Holyfield, of course, won. It was a fun fight. And it was really neat because we kind of set up in the stands. We didn't sit down low where all the celebrities and stuff were, but just the atmosphere and the excitement. And then whenever here back in DFW, when AT&T Stadium first opened in 2009, there was the talk that we were going to have Mayweather Pacquiao here. And then they had some kind of issues between the two of them that, you know, kept them from fighting for many more years, where one of them didn't want the other to take a drug test. I really don't remember the specifics, but Pacquiao ended up fighting here. And so we went to go see the Pacquiao fight at AT&T Stadium. And it's just, to me, it's really fun. We had Holyfield fought here at American Airlines Center against a guy I'd never heard of. And it was local celebrities. We had Deion Sanders and a few other local people here. But, you know, it's just something about those fights that, you know, today, I don't know that it necessarily has the same buzz because we don't have the heavyweights like we did back in the day. You know, probably you being a boxing podcast host would probably know more, but the Klitschko's, it seemed like, kind of messed a lot of that up for those of us here in the U.S.
Well, and true, the heavyweight boxing may be making a comeback at some point, but yeah, this was fueled around the time of the 80s. You mentioned HBO, did a recent boxing podcast from our friends at Radio Influence on the end of the era of HBO televising fights. But in the 80s, they were televising all the Larry Holmes heavyweight title fights, televising then Mike Tyson's heavyweight title fights in and around Rocky IV. and what was going on with this movie. All right, so moving along, the big fight happens, and Apollo finds out in a hurry that Drago is no joke, Jay Betzel.
Oh, and it's funny. It looks like he didn't even have any style. He's kind of just standing there trying to go hit him. He's got one hand up, and he's kind of walking around and look almost robotic, and you've got Apollo bouncing around the way he taught Rocky to fight, and it's evident within a matter of seconds, within the first couple punches, that he's in way over his head. But you know, he manages to survive the first round somehow, which he probably should have, been knocked
Rocky
out.
Rocky wants
or
to
whatever.
Stop the fight. Rocky
his wife is screaming, "Stop the fight!"
Right.
And, but you've got Apollo with his never say die attitude, and his, like I said, so much of it is perception. He wanted to do this fight to show the world he's still there. Now he wants to show the world that he's not going to get his ass kicked, by, by this guy nobody's heard of, and that's what he's thinking. He's not thinking he's going to die. But he goes back out there, and Rocky's got the towel in his hand, and you've got Duke screaming, "Throw the damn towel!" And Rocky's got his, in his mind, he knows he needs to throw it, but he's got his loyalty to Apollo because Apollo's last words to him was, "No matter what, don't stop this fight, no matter what." So he's like fighting within himself what to do, and it's too little, too late. That last hit, that was it. He not only does he fall down, but his body's like in convulsions. It's not like a knockout where he's going to be up in a minute or two, and just kind of groggy and with a headache. This is it.
Well, there's
and of course. The great line from the announcer where it says it's pandemonium, because you got Leroy Neiman as the ring announcer saying Drago's won. You've got all the press and everybody up in the
of
ring.
Of course.
You got Apollo laying there dying. The doctors can't get to him. His wife can't get to him. And you've got Rocky covered in blood with holding Apollo like it's his own son almost, looking up at Drago, who basically, imagine in the days of Twitter and all that now, if he pulled this, if he dies, he dies. You know, imagine the kind of feedback he would get if this happened in 2018. But
that's all part of the aura that's around the seemingly invincible Russian roided up star here.
Well, don't forget, boxing wise, you remember it wasn't too much longer. It was probably around this same just generation, anyways, where Ray Boom Boom Mancini killed Duck Koo Kim in the ring.
In Las Vegas, correct.
Yeah, and so, this has happened. It's not like this doesn't happen. That was a big fight. It was on CBS. Everybody saw it. It wasn't like something that people just heard about. So, it's one of those things that could certainly happen, and I'm not saying that necessarily influenced this or anything, but it's certainly one of those where Boom Boom Mancini was never the same.
This is very true, and deaths in boxing were much more prevalent back in the 50s, the 60s, et cetera, but that was one that had happened a couple of years before Rocky IV. Came out. But yeah, they played on that. I don't know about you. Let's bring it back to you and me. In the theater, I was like crushed. How is Apollo Creed dead? Because then the next thing they show, they're at the funeral and he's putting the championship belt on the coffin. It's like reality hits hard. And at this point, again, I'm a teenager. You're a teenager watching this. You're having to accept the fact that Drago just killed Apollo Creed.
Yeah, I was really sad. And of course, like I said, I knew it was going to happen because, it was in the previews. It wasn't like it was a complete surprise, but still, it's kind of like, even in real life, things are going to happen. It doesn't make it any sadder or any, whatever. And that's
easier,
kind of how I
right.
felt with that. Yeah, it didn't make it easier to cope with. And of course, when you're younger too, you know that movies aren't real, but still Apollo Creed and Rocky, these are like your old friends. And seeing that happen was really sad. And then this is kind of where the movie kind of makes a little bit of a detour into, we've talked about this a few times, where in the 80s was very MTV influenced, and the movie turns into several montages after this, with the first one being Rocky accepting the fight to take on Drago in Russia on Christmas for no money. And he has to give up his heavyweight belt because they're not going to sanction the fight. And it doesn't matter. All that matters to him is to get vengeance and stand up for his friend. And so he has the press conference. Of course, he doesn't tell Adrian because she finds out when she pulls up to their house and there's 50 media guys waiting on her to pull in.
Well, because
so
he knows she would never give his blessing to do it.
Oh,
that's the intertwined thing that you keep coming back to, because remember now, and again, I'm such a fan of all the movies, all of them except number 5. When he first meets Adrian and he's trying to date Adrian, she doesn't understand why he wants to be a boxer or a fighter and have his nose broken. He's bragging that he's never had his nose broken. They're going around the ice skating rink. He's walking and she's skating and the guy's cutting the lights off on him on the ice skating rink. She doesn't want him to be a fighter. She just wants him to be a guy and be your boyfriend and eventually be your husband. And that's kind of intertwined into the second one, where she goes to have the child and she's in the coma and he realizes this is real life. It's different than being a fighter. And of course, she wakes up out of the coma, Jay Betzel. And what does she tell him to go do? She tells him, go win. And then of course, you've got Mickey Burgess Meredith in the background going, what are we waiting for? You know, let's go train finally about this. So my point is, she's basically telling him in the third one, we're going to live the rest of our lives and you don't have to be a fighter. You don't have to get killed. Clubber Lang can kill you. I don't want him to kill you. And he says, I can do this. He like overrules her. So like all throughout their relationship and in these movies, she just wants him to be husband, companion, father to their son. She doesn't care about him fighting anymore. So there's no way he's going to seek her approval again on this. And that intertwines into the plot later in the movie.
And it harkens back to when he's standing at the bottom of the stairs and she's standing there just completely livid with him, you know, where he says, I'm a fighter. That's what you married. That's who I am. And there's nothing we can do about it. That's the reason we have all this stuff is because of me
but
being a fighter.
She yells back to him, and you, she says, you can't win.
She says, well, she said, you know what everyone's saying. If you read it and you see on TV, they're saying the same thing. She's not telling him from her voice, you can't win. She's saying, everyone's saying you can't win.
That's right. But she makes the point to him, what are you doing this for? You're not doing this for me. You're not doing this to be able to bring Apollo back. So it plays into – I really like how – I mean, again, we're biased. We love the movies. But I like how it's going to come back around later on. He's going to eventually have to have her one more time to light the fire, to energize him, because she's going to show up later and basically give her approval. Okay, you can go fight him. I'll live with whatever happens, just like Apollo's wife had to live with him getting killed by this guy. But I give you the blessing here. I give you the approval. Go fight this guy. Go beat him for Apollo. Go beat him for me. Go beat him for all of us.
Right. And so she tells him you can't win. And of course, you know, and then you kind of see the look in his face. That's what sets that off, where he's like, you know, now that makes it a little more real than him just doing it and not telling her, right? So then, like I said, we kind of have this series of montages from the MTV 80s. Where we've got him taking off in his car and kind of having the flashbacks for the first three movies with him kind of showing his friendship, how it evolved with Apollo and Mickey with Clubber Lang and everything. And it's one of those deals where, you know, watching just that montage, it gives me the chills, you know, because these are people that we know, these movies. I mean, it's these movies, we talk about how memorable they are. But I mean, watching just that montage of him driving around and thinking about all that's gone on, it's like we've experienced all this with him. We've seen Rocky evolve from the guy punching meat to the guy that's driving Lotuses and Lamborghinis and all that, you know, and having a family. And, you know, that's another thing, too, is when he gets back, he's talking to his son, you know, and his son says, are you scared? And he's like, oh, no. He goes, I would be if some big guy wanted to beat me up. You know, and he's like, okay, man, I'm a little scared. But it's cool to see him interacting with his son, you know, especially knowing that in real life his son passed away, not that actor, but his son in real life, you know. So it's kind of cool seeing the interactions of the behind the scenes of Rocky and everything. And then, you know, when he's leaving to go to Russia and she doesn't come with him, he's getting in the car and looks up and sees her in the window and she didn't even wave. She's just looking at him. You can tell she's, you know, she's mad and scared at the same time. And kind of like you said, you know, he shows up to Russia to train, and you want to kind of take it from there.
Well, it's interesting that he wants to go old school, because, and this is the contrast of it, that, you know, kind of like Apollo taught him, hey, you're going to have to do something different and unique to beat Clubber Lang, and I'm going to have to teach you to be a different fighter. You're going to have to learn how to box. You're going to have to learn how to move and use your jab and fight like me a little more in this, and you're going to have to surprise this guy. You can't just stand in front of him, because he will, Clubber Lang, we're talking about in the third one, he will eventually hit you with the big punches and he will beat you if that's all you do. So he had to become a different fighter. Remember, he's swimming. He learns how to swim in the fight. What was it, the line? Does he swim? He sinks like a rock, or whatever Paulie says in the fight. But he learns how to swim. He learned they run the wind sprints. They do all of the different kind of aerobic stuff in the gym.
But remember, that's not without struggle, too, because he gets mad, and because he's not running really hard on the beach because he's got his mind on other things.
Well,
and he's afraid of Clubber Lang.
Exactly. So, but in that case, he had to go outside of Rocky's normal normal straight ahead, just, you know, whatever to train. But in this case, he goes back to it. He goes back to old school, and we're not even really training in a gym. We're training like in a cabin that's supposed to be in Russia, which is actually what, in Jackson Hole, Wyoming?
Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So,
but he's training exclusively in the cabin with Duke, with Tony Evers, Duke, and they're training, you know, picking up the
cart. Don't forget, when they first get there, you know, Paulie's there, so of course he has to throw his commentary out with, this is beneath human standards. How am I supposed to watch the Rose Bowl? Bet they don't even have room service.
They don't have,
you know,
my
so in case anyone had any questions about how low rent this place was, it went ahead and confirmed it with Paulie's critique of it.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's supposed to be in the middle of nowhere, but that's what Rocky wants in this case. He wants to go old school and wants to get back to the roots of being Rocky. So again, there's no, you know, real heavy bag or boxing or that kind of stuff. No sparring partner, no none of that. It's just go get ready physically. And it's also a chance for Stallone to show off how ripped he is and how he can do all of these different aerobic exercises and strength tests, including –
And it's like the ultimate workout montage. If anyone's ever debating on getting back into the gym, if they watch that like 20 minutes in the middle of the movie, which is – it's intertwined. You've got Drago running in this upscale gym, you know, using the latest and greatest equipment, and they're testing every single thing. And you see him lifting weights, and then you see Rocky lifting up like a horse carriage with Polly and Duke and Adrian there. And I mentioned Adrian being there because she shows up, and he sees after he's been on a jog.
Right, he goes on his run, and he comes back, and she's standing there. And then I remember in the theater, I'm sitting there with my friends going, okay, now here we go, because she's there. She's going to give her approval. He's going to be ready. I was going to joke with you, though. It's very much the same as the famous Jay's workout routine, like when you hang backwards upside down off a loft and start doing sit-ups like Stallone. It's almost like Stallone just wanted to show off in the training sequences. Look at the different things that I can do as an actor, but also as an athlete, as a bodybuilder, and how physically strong I am, abdominally, core muscle wise, and whatever. I mean, it's ridiculous when you watch that workout.
And I'm not accusing anyone of anything, but it's hard to imagine looking like that without some help from steroids or HGH or something. Just saying.
Still, it's the 80s, and you know, and that's the implication with Drago, is they're injecting him with the steroids too. As they were becoming more prevalent with the Russian Olympic teams and the East German Olympic teams, the communist countries. So, but I love the fact, what about you? I love the fact that he goes back old school Rocky, including the climactic training scene where he's running and he has to ditch the KGB agents that are following him and run up to the top of the mountain.
His official chaperones get left in the dust.
Well, because he's not running up the steps in Philadelphia, you know, to the
dun-dun. He's running up the side of the mountain.
He's running up the side of the mountain, and he gets up on top of the mountain and he's yelling out to Drago that he's ready to fight him. Drago! Drago! Yeah. And I love that.
I'm telling you, like I said at the beginning, this is like 91 minutes of just pure adrenaline. You know, and it cuts from that, it cuts to the fight, and you've got just, you know, there's so much anticipation. That's kind of why I was referring back to the 80s and 90s with the huge heavyweight fights that were so big with so many celebrities. You know, and this one being, you know, imagine a fight like this in Christmas for no money. You know what I mean?
You gotta appreciate something here in the time frame, and we're older now. There are some people that may be listening to us that don't grasp the political climate, the world politics climate, and what it meant. Part of this is the Russians or the communists could only be amateurs. They couldn't be professionals. You couldn't fight for the heavyweight title in this instance. And so, you know, this is like a fictitious thing that wasn't going to happen in real life. In other words, Larry Holmes wasn't going to fight a Russian heavyweight champion because it was a communist country and it was basically going to be forbidden. Remember, we boycotted the Moscow Summer Olympics, and then the Russians boycotted the 1984 Summer Olympics. There was great contentiousness between the governments and the sports, therefore, as well. And so this wasn't a fight that could realistically happen. It's not like the present day where you've got great Russian athletes that are professionals in all sports, including boxing. So this is kind of like a fantasy here that we're going to have this fight with Rocky going to Russia, quote unquote, to fight Drago here for the symbolic heavyweight championship, even though it's not a sanctioned fight. It's interesting. But they had to play off of that because the Russians weren't allowed to be professionals, Jay, is my point.
Right. And the thing, and going to the fight itself, it was so well done. You know what I mean?
Why?
They just pound each other.
Why do you think it was so well done? Like the choreography and the script that Stallone had, the choreography?
All of it. I mean, it's one of those things where you talked earlier about him towering over him. But, I mean, it's just the fact that, of course – I mean, I don't mean necessarily just the inside the ring, but I mean the whole setup in the arena. Where'd you say it was actually filmed?
So they filmed it in British Columbia. They went from Jackson Hole, Wyoming, and went to Vancouver and had this. And I don't know if this arena is still there. Somebody will have to hit you and me up on – we've seen that on Twitter or Facebook. If the Agrodome Arena, which is in Vancouver or was in Vancouver, was the 10,000-seat arena that they chose to use – and they then had to doctor that up to look like Russia and decorate it, et cetera. And it took the span of about 2 days to make that arena over into looking like the Soviet Union for this fight. But, yeah, I mean, the atmosphere, I mean, in the movie theater where I was, I mean, it was like you were at that fight. It was that riveting while we were watching on the big screen. I don't know about you, Big Famous Jack.
Yeah, and you've got the guy who's very similar in appearance to Mikhail Gorbachev up there sitting above watching, and you've got the fans that are into it. And of course, they are booing Rocky when he first arrives.
Which is hilarious because they've given them all Russian flags. They've dressed them like Russians, yeah. But they're a bunch of Canadians that are extras for the movie. And they had over 10,000 local residents and volunteers and extras that came to be part of this and to be in the movie shots. So that's fascinating that we're making all the Canadian people look like the Russian enemies, because remember when they introduce Rocky and they show the crowd, they're ready for blood. They're ready for him to die too, just like Apollo Creed.
Yeah, and you know, and like one of my favorite parts of this entire series was the talk that Apollo had with Rocky before the Clubber Lang fight. You know, when he's being dead serious, he's like, remember what he did to you, you know, and he's bringing him around. And then when, you know, and he's in the corner the whole time. And at the end, when he knocks Clubber Lang down and they're showing, you know, the referee count, and they go over to Apollo and he goes seven with his hand right above, you know, I mean, to me, like, you know, I talk about getting the chills watching these movies. I get the chills thinking about that. So whenever, you know, you've got 15 rounds of these guys just pummeling each other and, you know, and you get to the end and you've got, you know, when it's apparent, and it's one of those things, you know, he's going to win because it's Rocky. But at the same time, Rocky's lost a couple times. He lost the original one. Well, he lost to Clubber Lang. You never know.
And let's be honest. I mean, I remember going round and round with my mother about this, and I said to her, you shouldn't watch this. This is over-the-top brutality, even though they're not really punching each other. It's Hollywooded up by Stallone. By boxing standards, they would have never let that fight continue on with these guys just beating the daylights.
The Apollo fight continue, which that referee these
but
days
I mean,
would
for 15
sued.
Rounds. Now, I know some would argue that are big time fight fans, if you're listening to us, that the Gotti Ward fights, they stood and brutalized each other for 10 rounds. I'm just saying, 999 times out of 1,000, that fight's never going to go to a 10th round or a 12th round with these guys standing and beating on each other.
Well, this went 15 rounds, remember?
Right. It's a movie. It is supposed to be Hollywooded up, and that's exactly what it is with Stallone, and it works because, I mean, he's got to go the distance again. Remember, he starts with Rocky with just being able to go the distance with Apollo. He's going to have to go the distance
and
to
even
Drago, the bigger
Rocky
man.
Rocky Balboa when he went the distance with Antonio Tarver.
Exactly.
You know, that's how he is. It's his bit. But so into the movie, you know, he's going to win. But you've got Adrian, you know, screaming, you're going to do it. You know, and then when he goes down and they actually – you see Drago kind of fall on the ropes to know he's not getting back up, and Rocky just stands there with his hands up. It's just one of those things where it's just so inspiring and so
well.
Awesome.
Before that,
a little
though,
dude
let's
doing
back
that.
Up. Let's back up one step. Before that, Rocky has just fought and taken every punch, and he's won the crowd over. And the crowd is now chanting Rocky, Rocky. And so then in the corner, they're saying to him, you know, they're belittling Drago, and they're saying to him, look at what you've done. You've made them, you know, cheer for Rocky. You've made them cheer for the American.
Yeah, Koloff calls him an idiot.
And
he
so
picks him up.
And so he picks him up Darth Vader style by the throat like he's going to kill him. And then he looks up at Gorbachev at the Politburo and says, I fight for me. He's not fighting for the country anymore. I'm fighting for me to beat this guy because you all have turned on me here and you're now Rocky fans. And then, of course, in the moment that you just shared, Rocky does the unthinkable. He finally overcomes Drago, hits him hard enough, knocks him down, and Drago can't get up.
Well, you know, and Rocky had said, I'm going to take everything he has, and for him to win, he's going to have to kill me. You know, and he can't do it. He's got – it's just – it's nothing against Apollo, because Apollo was not Rocky, obviously. But it's just showing, like, everything I've got is being put out there. This isn't for show.
I still love at some point there's deadpan lines where Paulie, in between rounds in the corner, says, "Remember what I said about wanting to be you? Not anymore.
Forget it. Or you've got Duke going to Paulie. What's he doing? Like, he's winning.
He's winning. Exactly. This is what he's always been.
Yeah, and you've got, and I forgot to mention this, but I want to throw it out, was Barry Tompkins is calling the fight.
Right.
So you've got the play-by-play, and Barry Tompkins called the HBO fights when I was a kid, before Jim Lampley.
And I've had a chance professionally to encounter Barry Tompkins on more than one occasion, say hello to him, working basketball games, as a matter of fact. And I always say to him, love you and Rocky, as well as working all those fights on HBO. He's there, immortalized forever.
Else he was great at was Wimbledon. When HBO had Wimbledon, it'd come on at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and he had no commercials and no, you know, granted a lot of it wasn't live because it would come on in the afternoon, but, you know, we didn't have Twitter and Facebook to tell you what had happened. So it was live to me.
Well,
you know, I didn't know that some of these guys had won or lost. And I thought he was just an amazing announcer. What's he doing now? Is he doing UCLA still or
he's
what?
He's been doing broadcasting on the West Coast and occasionally does some games on TV, et cetera. And he's up there too, but he was iconic. In the 80s, he was synonymous with all the great fights on HBO, so he was a perfect pick to come in and be the announcer here.
And the guy that was with him was kind of like Monty on Major League. He didn't really add a lot to
it. You're wondering if that was a friend or a relative or an in-law while we're talking about that again. But it's kind of interesting. You notice they put them in the blue, not the red for the Russians. They put them in the blue blazers, and, of course, they're broadcasting on USA Network. Just to kind of throw that in there with the whole –
which used to have Friday night fights, if I'm correct.
Well, you are correct. And so that whole U.S.-Soviet Union Cold War thing – you know, capitalism versus communism, it's prevalent through the whole movie and through the end of this fight. And that leads to the big moment where the knockout happens and then Jay Betzel and Rocky IV, the speech happens.
If I can change and you can change, everybody can change.
Stallone just wanted to have a political message out there for the Russians. And sure enough, a few years later, everything did change. And the Berlin Wall, we just celebrated the 29th anniversary of the Berlin Wall coming down. Mr. Gorbachev, take down this wall. You know, the whole Ronald Reagan thing that took place in the 80s. The whole glasnost with Gorbachev, where they got together and everybody, they thawed the relationship, where the Russians now were willing to
be communist. So we have Rocky IV to thank for the wall coming down.
I don't know if we have it to thank, but at least planted the seed that Rocky beat Drago in the ring, and we, the United States, could beat you, but we instead want to be your friends, and you should be a democracy, you should have elections, you shouldn't be communist. So it did actually happen.
Well, thank you, Sylvester Stallone.
So we've
talked about the movie. Let's. I know we've been chatting for a while now. Let's hit a few of the fun little facts that we've got from our research. You ready for some of these?
Hit me.
Okay. Here we have, according to Sylvester Stallone, Carl Weathers nearly quit the film when Dolph Lundgren tossed him into the corner of the boxing ring. Weathers shouted profanities at Lundgren while leaving the ring and announcing he was calling his agent and quitting the movie.
So in other words, that was deviating from the script, or he just didn't like the fact that it was in the script and Lundgren got too rough with it?
Sounds like he was deviating from the script. It sounds only after Sylvester Stallone forced the two actors to reconcile did the movie actually continue. The event caused a four-day work stoppage while Weathers had to be talked back into the part, and Lundgren agreed to tone down his aggressiveness. How about that?
Can you imagine that? Where you go through this whole thing and Carl Weathers is doing the power play, and what are we going to do now? Because we've built the whole premise of the movie that Drago kills Apollo, and that's what gets Rocky back in the ring.
Stallone talking Carl Weathers into coming in was a $300 million conversation. Let's just go with that, right?
Well, and it's not unlike – let's go back to the movies – it's not unlike in Rocky III, where basically Carl Weathers has to tell him it's tough love. There is no tomorrow. You got to come back in here. You got to get this thing filmed. We're on a budget. We got to get this done. You don't want to be known forever as having backed out on this. I did not know that story, though, that he put the movie on hold because Dolph Lundgren got too rough with him in the actual filming of the fight scenes.
Well, and I know you and I have talked about this a lot. I don't know if I've actually said it on the show or not. But I was an extra in Any Given Sunday when they filmed that here in DFW at Texas Stadium. And Jamie Foxx and LL Cool J got into some problems, you know, on the set. And those of us extras were told to take the day off, and we didn't have to come back for 2 days because that one had a work stoppage that Oliver Stone had to deal with because LL Cool J apparently had talked about having a restraining order against Jamie Foxx. And so that'd be really hard for the running back and the quarterback to have exactly. to be so far away from each
Same
other.
Thing.
So anyways,
cooler heads prevail. Movie goes on. All right, what else? What else do you have for me on Rocky IV?
Here's a good one. The hit the one in the middle exchange,
yes.
which we had when he saw three of them, and Paulie told him hit one in the middle, is apparently that's long part of boxing lore, which yes. actually did happen during the Max Bear, Max Schmeling.
Yes.
Heavyweight fight in 1933. And said Bear was knocked groggy by a right hand in the first round, told his corner, I see three of them. His ex-champ Jack Dempsey was in Bear's corner, responded with the famous line, and Bear went on to score a 10th round knockout.
And that's where Stallone, being a big fight fan, and even Burt Young, the late Burt Young who played Paulie, he was a boxer himself. They would know that line from boxing history. Hit the one in the middle is the famous line. So I love that. All right, what else? You got any other trivia for me here?
Here's one. Tony Burton, who we mentioned earlier, he has a scene in the movie where the KGB is in the cabin with him. He's playing chess. And apparently Tony Burton is an accomplished chess player in real life, and he once defeated master chessman Stanley Kubrick on the set of The Shining. How about that?
All right. So he was a bit
– pretty.
And right, that is going on, and he looks at him and goes, checkmate, my friend. He put it on him. It's kind of like some foreshadowing of Rocky against Drago in the ring.
Exactly. All right, early drafts of the script had Mr. T reprising his role as Clubber Lang. Not sure how he would have been in it if he would have been in Drago's corner or what's going on there, but that obviously did not come to fruition. We got James Brown, which we talked about earlier. It says Living in America was released as a single from the movie soundtrack and became Brown's first top 40 single in 10 years, as well as his last top 10 single of his career.
There's
your answers to why he would do it and how much finagling it took.
The MTV video played over and over and over again outside the movie, like a trailer for the movie in the 80s.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Just constantly reminding you, in case you didn't know, this movie's out and you need to go see it. So Sylvester Stallone, who we mentioned wrote and directed as well and starred in this, his original cut of the movie was 1 hour longer, which is hard to imagine.
Wow.
I don't know if it'd be more montages or what else was in it, but that was the story there.
The edict was they wanted a much shorter, as you mentioned, 90-minute movie as opposed to that. So,
well, from a business standpoint, the longer the movie is, the fewer showings it can have, especially on opening weekend. And granted, back in the 80s, these movies would stay in the theaters for 5-6 months if people are still going to see them, where now you need to get that opening weekend gross because it's going to be off the big screen in the next couple weeks. You know, it'll still be in the theaters, but it'll be one of the small ones in the corner, like, you know, auditorium number 36 or something.
Okay, so apparently in that 1 hour, I'm looking at one other site. I never knew that this site existed until we started doing this research, and we'll give them a free plug. The site is TotalRocky.com. They say there are several deleted scenes from that 1 hour you're talking about, including scenes in between Apollo's funeral and the press conference for the Rocky Drago fight. However, the studio just decided they weren't needed. You could go directly from the funeral to, hey, he's now going to fight Drago. There's also a scene where the U.S. Boxing Board is basically telling Rocky that he is banned, basically, for going and fighting Drago because it's a communist country. If he goes to fight him and fight him in Russia, he's on his own. He's no longer the heavyweight champ. They felt, I guess, it wasn't necessary to show that either, that they could basically just say it in the press conference. And so save time, even though they shot those scenes, they never saw the light of day, the deleted scenes.
Interesting. I'd be, you know, these days you can see everything. So, I mean, if they actually filmed it, I'd be curious to see
how those turned out.
So
the question is, are they only on the cutting
somewhere.
Room floor? Are they on deleted extras on a DVD? We got to do some investigation on we've seen that to find
that
out.
You know, Sylvester Stallone is on Twitter. Maybe we can reach out and ask him. So moving on, this is the first film in which Gonna Fly Now is not sung, although a few bars of song are incorporated into the score. Rocky V, which came out in 1990, also features part of that song in instrumental form, but it wouldn't be until Rocky Balboa in 2006 that the song would reappear.
I love Gonna Fly Now, phenomenal song, but you're right. I mean, we had the, like you said, almost like the 80s soundtrack of all of these different songs and stuff. Yes, it works. It obviously works for Rocky IV.
Here's a fun one. Bill Conti, you know, the guy that did all the music did the score for the Karate Kid and Rockies and stuff. He ended up scoring Karate Kid Part 2 instead of Rocky 4. And coincidentally, Peter Cetera, who we know from the band Chicago, He wrote the Karate Kid theme song, The Glory of Love, for Rocky IV, but Stallone rejected it in favor of Hearts on Fire.
How
by
about
Cafferty.
That?
You remember that.
Yeah, yeah, just like the old commercial.
So The Glory of Love could have been in Rocky IV.
Just like the old commercial in recent years, the women love Cetera. So Stallone didn't love Cetera, so he didn't end up using it, and that song went to the Karate Kid too. Did not know that. This is great stuff. All right,
here's a
else?
Fun one. Here's a fun one that kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Brigitte Nielsen's character was not written in the original shooting script, where all of her talking was done by Nikolai Koloff. Sylvester Stallone, quote unquote, likely incorporated her as a last minute rewrite. Coincidentally.
I wonder why, because they were together in an item for that 2 or 3 years, like we talked about earlier.
And then during the training montage, Rocky grabs a black and white picture of Drago off of his mirror frame and crumbles it just like Apollo did with Rocky's picture in Rocky II. That's pretty cool.
That's exactly right. Symbolism.
Says the Soviet premiere in the skybox during the Rocky Drago match strongly resembles contemporary Soviet leader Mikhail Gorbachev. Actor David Lloyd Austin later played Gorbachev in The Naked Gun.
That's right.
The original Naked Gun.
And he also, I still remember him, he was also frequently on different shows where he didn't even have a speaking part, because who knows if he could even pull off a Russian accent. They would just have him there and kind of smile and wave. He got to take part in different things because he looked like Gorbachev, and they could put the ugly birthmark on his bald head too to make him look like the Russian to make him look like the Russian premier. All right,
I got a couple more.
Listen, we've almost gone 15 rounds on Rocky IV. What else? Go ahead.
Relax. We don't have a time frame. We're not in a movie. So okay, the Final Countdown, the famous song by Europe,
yes,
is often people think it was in this movie, when in actuality it was released after Rocky was in the theater. There's just similarities to the score.
I understand.
A lot of people think the Final Countdown was in this. It was not. This is the soundtrack to Rocky IV, which you and I both love, right? Can we agree on that?
I had it on cassette. I don't know that I still have it, but I had Rocky IV on cassette, the soundtrack, yes.
It won the Razzie for the worst musical score in 1985 for any movie, despite the fact that it's been regarded as a fan favorite, especially with the inspiring and uplifting training
montage. I would love
music.
To know, how many millions of copies did the soundtrack sell? It had to be millions. I mean, maybe not.
I bet it was, because back then when you had the Top Gun soundtrack and all, you know, Footloose, Flashdance, soundtracks were huge. Dirty Dancing. Remember how big those things were? The Big Chill. I think Chill soundtrack may have made more than the movie.
Exactly. But, and this was the time frame in the 80s and too, and MTV had a lot of it. That's for sure.
Okay. At the press conference for the Drago Creed fight, Drago is wearing his Soviet Army uniform. He wears the rank of captain and was awarded a Hero of the Soviet Union medal. This was the highest medal awarded by the Soviet government. Little interest there for next time you're watching it. This is in an interview in 2010 around the release of The Expendables. Dolph Lundgren said he does not have any of his Ivan Drago stuff and was asked if he saw the shorts because he said they were stolen in a burglary 20 years before.
How about that? Well, and we do know that you've already made reference in Creed 2, there's a reprisal of the Drago role in Drago's son. So you wonder, I guess we got to find out. Is Creed going to be in the red, white, and blue? And is Drago going to be in the red and the gold like the old school? You would have to think yes. We'll have to find out.
We will see. And here we mentioned this earlier too. This is kind of the official part of it. The Creed-Drago fight, which took place at the MGM Grand Hotel and Casino, was sold to Bally Corporation and renamed Bally's Las Vegas. A new and much larger MGM was built, opened in 1993.
There you go.
That MGM that you and I were talking about has made an appearance in a movie. It was Vegas Vacation in 1997.
And if I'm not mistaken, they've done a couple of other crazy boxing things. I want to say like the Woody Harrelson Banderas Play It to the Bone is at the MGM Grand. The big fight that they have is at the MGM Grand.
I think it was actually, yeah.
So they've used it in movies about boxing too. Down the road. So good stuff on all of these fronts. All right, what else have we not covered here on the Stallone, Carl Weathers, Dolph Lundgren, Rocky IV? What else?
Well, I always like to, when we're about to wrap up, is to do what the critics said about the movies back when they came
out. Hit me.
And for this one, you know, the movie critics show we grew up watching was Siskel and Ebert, correct? Siskel and Ebert in the movies.
Right.
And so Gene Siskel on ChicagoTribune.com says he actually really, really liked Rocky IV, and he mentions it because of the character of Ivan Drago is the one that is the one thing that makes him like it so much. And he even says that kind of going towards the end of his review, Clint Eastwood's Dirty Harry series has suffered because he hasn't had a villain as rotten as the original killer. in the original Dirty Harry. James Bond's been crippled in part because Roger Moore's adversaries have been more comical than threatening, but the character of Ivan Drago is a winner in Rocky IV. Since we believe that he is a machine-tooled, steroid-injected fighting machine of major proportion, by comparison, consider the clownish aspects of the similarly huge Jaws character in the Roger Moore Bond films. Drago is 10 times the man's Jaws, and Rocky IV works because of that fact. And then wrapping up his review, he says, this is just a movie. Whereas Stallone with Rambo is messing around with real places and real events. In Rocky IV, we all know this is pure Hollywood, pure fantasy, and very well-made Hollywood fantasy indeed. And he gave it 3.5 out of 4 stars.
I'm with you.
Now, the Ebert part.
Yeah, go ahead. What did Ebert think?
The Ebert part of Siskel and Ebert did not like it as much as we did. He gave it 2 out of 4. He said the Rocky series is finally losing its legs. It's been a long one hit after another. But Rocky IV is a last gasp, a film so predictable that viewing is like watching one of the old sitcoms where the characters never change and the same situations turn up again and again and again. Stallone seems to even be getting tired of the series. As the writer, director, and star, he puts himself through the same exact paces. Let's go to the very bottom of his and see how he wraps it up. He says, Rocky IV is movie making by the numbers. Even the climactic fight scene isn't as exciting as it should be, maybe because we know with a certainty born of long experience how it's going to turn out. Stallone says, this will be the last Rocky movie. he should have taken from Rocky Marciano as an example and retired undefeated. And we know how that turned out.
so we know two different things there. Number one, Siskel and Ebert should have never bought that was going to be the last one. They had already made 3 of them before that. And number two, he should have never made Rocky V, because I would love to know. We're never going to do it. We've seen that on Rocky V. But Siskel and Ebert had to
say
have destroyed.
That was pure certainty.
They had to have destroyed Rocky V for how bad it was in terms of plot and Tommy Gunn and fighting him in the street at the very end. And it was just almost like Stallone.
Now, Tommy Morrison is passed away in real life, right?
That's correct. But I mean, okay. it's almost like Stallone was making that movie up, dialogue included, on the fly, like the day of that they were shooting scenes. So it was that.
When we talked about it, we went through Stallone's biography earlier, basically, or his movie list, that you know he would go down, you know, and then he would need to go back to the well with Rocky and Rambo, and that's pretty much what he had done. He was coming off Stopper, My Mom Will Shoot, and all that kind of stuff. So he was that he revisited Rocky, and the problem with Rocky V, well, there's many, many problems, was the fact that he was poor. Paulie lost all of his money.
Well, but the premise is he's brain damaged from the fourth fight, and he lost power of attorney to Paulie, and Paulie lost all their money. Just poorly conceived, should have never been made. We've talked about that with Caddyshack 2 and with some other movies that we've discussed.
I've got a hot opinion about that. I'm going to say I like Caddyshack 2 better than Rocky 5.
I think they both belong in the same category, which is never to see the light of day again. But Rocky 4, fantastic. I still vividly remember over 30-plus years ago, now approaching 35 years ago, that everybody, including me, was standing up and roaring at the end, cheering Rocky on when he knocked Drago out again, like we were right there at the fight and it was an actual fight. You get so caught up and don't remember this is a movie. That's what Stallone wanted. That's what a lot of people that make sports movies, adrenaline movies, they want the crowd on their feet cheering in, even in a movie theater. I confess, I was up cheering at the end of Rocky IV, Famous Jay.
Absolutely. It's the same as the comedy movies. If you go to see a movie, like I talked about experiences, I remember seeing Home Alone and laughing so hard during that little 15-minute run of him torturing Joe Pesci and Daniel Stern. And that's part of the fun of that movie, is looking back and laughing with like 500 strangers watching that movie. You know, for that, you know, little time, we all agreed on how fun it was. And that's kind of what Rocky was like, is, you know, no matter what, we were all rooting for him. And, you know, it was great to see him win.
All right. Are we all good on Rocky IV? I mean, we could go on and on with all these different Rocky movies on subsequent ones. Did we cover Rocky IV thoroughly? I think we went the full 15 rounds.
I think we went the distance. I thought, you know, and if someone hadn't seen it in a while, it's certainly worth revisiting. TJ mentioned earlier that I said I watched it yesterday for this, and I found it. It's on YouTube Movies for free. So you can go on Amazon Prime and pay like $3. But if you want to see it for free, it's on YouTube Movies, right?
Yeah, and it's sometimes they're replaying them now because Creed 2 is coming out. And again, you can chastise me. Go ahead. Yeah, I know you want to chastise me about Creed. Because
I'm really surprised you hadn't seen it.
I
will say when it came out, I thought probably the same thing a lot of people thought about Rocky V, is like, there is not any new ideas. What's the deal with this? but I went and saw it. You know, Sylvester Stallone was nominated for an Oscar. He did such a great job in this one. Michael B. Jordan's gone on to be in Black Panther. I mean, it's just, it was really, really good. And it's one of those where I had very little expectations. And when I saw it, you know, it was one of the same thing. You had people cheering in the theaters, and you know Creed 2 is going to be the same way with Adonis taking on Drago's son.
So there you go. So that's the setup for coming around this go around, and Rocky's still alive and kicking. 40 years after Stallone made Rocky, he is still going with the franchise. How about that? Or at least the extended franchise with Creed in this instance. So, all right, we had fun dissecting this one. We remind everybody again, we've seen that on Twitter, on Facebook. Give us some opinions about Rocky IV. Subscribe to this show. If you found us on Radio Influence, or if you've now found the podcast, you obviously want to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, TuneIn. The show will automatically come to you as soon as we have a new episode out each and every week, and we roll along here on We've Seen That. So again, rate the show, rank the show. Others will see it, share it out on social media when you see us sharing it. How can you not be a red-blooded American sports fan and not be a fan of Rocky, and especially Rocky IV?
Well, speaking of podcasts, I alluded to it earlier, but you want to tell everybody about your boxing podcast?
Again, one more time, they can find it on Radio Influence Big Fight Weekend, and around the top boxing matches that are going on, boxing making a comeback. At the time that we're talking, the American heavyweight champion DeAndre Wilder from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, is going to fight December 1st against Britain's Tyson Fury in a heavyweight title fight. So the heavyweight title fights are making a comeback. When the Americans are involved, we're much more interested. So it's only fitting that in and around Rocky IV with Rocky versus Drago, that heavyweight boxing with the United States champ against a foreigner is going to make a comeback in the actual boxing ring. So it all ties in. Love me some Rocky. I had a blast doing Rocky IV with you.
Well, I loved it too. And I want to mention this just real quick, a subtle plug. You know, as we're building our catalog, we've had a few shows now on Radio Influence, but I love listening to two particular movie podcasts, 80s All Over, which if you like ours, you would love 80s All Over. They're literally going from January 1980 through every single major release. And it's got Drew McQueen, Scott Weinberg. That's a great one. Another one, Junk Food Cinema with Cargill and Brian. And they have new episodes every week. And theirs is similar to ours. They'll have a lot more of movies like Charles Bronson, Chuck Norris, you know, those kind of things. But if you like our show and you want more of what we're doing, I highly recommend listening to those two shows.
Good plug with those guys. They do great work. And again, it's in our wheelhouse, the 80s, the 90s, and more. And I had a lot of fun here today talking about Rocky IV. We probably could have done another hour, but our 15 rounds are up, I believe, sir.
Well, we got to make sure it's under 91 minutes because we know the movie got cut for an hour. We don't want anybody to edit our show.
We're getting close on that. I had a blast. I hope you did too. Thank you, Famous Jay.
Thanks, guys.
We are going out to the soundtrack of Rocky IV as well. Hope you enjoyed it as much as we did. For Jay Betzel, I'm TJ Reeves. We thank you for being with us here on the latest edition of We've Seen That.
This is a Crush Performance Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
We are visiting with Crush favorite Jeff Colvin, the senior editor-at-large for Fortune magazine and best-selling author of the Crush must-read Talent is Overrated. So is it fair to say as the landscape shifts one way, there's going to be other opportunities that come about somewhere else? We just have to be prepared for it. Do you agree with that kind of sentiment?
Absolutely. And this is really important to remember. The whole history of technology for the past 250 or 300 years has been advancing technology always eliminates jobs. Mm-hmm. But it also makes possible the creation of new jobs. And on average, those new jobs are more productive and better paying than the jobs they eliminate. And so over time, we have had greater employment and rising living standards. The economic miracle of the past 300 years was made possible by advancing technology. And it eliminates jobs, but it always creates more jobs, and they're better jobs. That's the history. And so, you know, until a few years ago, this whole topic that we're talking about, this whole conversation we're having, wasn't really relevant mm-hmm. because economists felt that they knew how this works, right? Technology, you know, eliminates jobs. But on the whole, it's a good thing. More people will be working. They'll have a higher standard of living. What's significant is that now, for the first time ever, technologists, highly informed people, economists, executives, are not so sure that the historical pattern is going to hold.
Oh, really?
I have now asked various audiences of CEOs. Let me remind you of the history of technology and creating jobs and raising living standards and so forth. That's a historical pattern. When you look at today's advancing technology, what do you think? Is the historical pattern going to hold, or is this time different? When I've asked this question now, it is typically 50-50. And in some cases, there are even more people who raise their hands to say, this time is different.
Crush Performance with Jeff Kreshel can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.